here to present on health access and substance use disparities among Massachusetts lesbian, gay, and bisexual residents related to marital status. I'd really like to acknowledge my co-author of this presentation, Kerry Conron, who's done much of the analysis and been a guiding star for me in doing this work and an inspiration. We're very fortunate to have funding for this, both from the, I think now sort of somewhat defunct, Institute for Gay and Lesbian Strategic Studies at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, but it survives as a merged into the Williams Project, which is an LGBT think tank based at UCLA Law School. And that came through a grant from the Ford Foundation, as well as thanks to the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, HIV/AIDS Bureau, which also provides some additional resources for this work. Okay. So we we thought about doing this work, and because we have been looking at various issues around health disparities, and one of the things I'll just be describing is that we're lucky enough to have variables in the Massachusetts Behavioral Risk Factor Survey that enable us to have a representative sample population for the state of Massachusetts. But we began to think about marriage, given everything that's been going on in Massachusetts, and in particular, we looked at some of the prior research on the impact of marriage in the general population, and there is a full body of literature demonstrating the benefits of marriage. Some of these include greater likelihood of seeking care, more likely to eat healthily and to exercise, and less likely to drink excessively. That I cite one study from 1991. There is a large body of literature in this, and it's evolving. Some of the more recent literature shows there may be differences in the health impact of good marriages and bad marriages, perhaps not surprisingly. But still, the overriding weight of the literature to date is that there are health benefits. There are causality questions, though, too, that sort of inform the throughout this study that I'm presenting and all of these studies. That is, do healthier people choose marriage, or does marriage help people healthy? Obviously, there are gaps in knowledge about the impact of marriage on lesbians, gay men, and bisexual men and women. We've not been able to analyze health benefits of legal same-sex marriage because we haven't had legal same-sex marriage before, at least for same-sex couples, for lesbians and gay men, or for bisexual men and women in same-sex committed relationships who would choose to marry. So the hypothesis here is that legal marriage may have similar impacts for LGB people based on access to health care and other stabilizing effects. So here were the specific hypotheses that we decided to sort of put forward a priori and then look at the data to see if we could find evidence, proof or no proof. So that lesbians and bisexual women are disproportionately affected compared to their heterosexual counterparts, that gay and bisexual men are disproportionately affected compared to their heterosexual counterparts. We decided to look separately at men and women, given the fact that there's bodies of literature showing disparities in income and other factors for women in terms of access to care. So we thought we had done some of these analyses as a group, and I think it became natural for us to say, let's try and look at them separately. And then the third hypothesis is that marriage would have a mitigating effect on disparities for both men and women. So, as I mentioned, we were working with Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System in Massachusetts. This is an annual telephone survey that includes questions around health behavior, such as smoking, diet and exercise, screening information for hypertension and cancer, basic sociodemographic information like age, education, etc. CDC, provides core survey questions that are conducted in all 50 states, plus D.C., Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. And states can add additional questions, sometimes localities can add additional questions as well. In this case, we're talking about statewide data and questions that were asked statewide. It's a stratified probability sample, and adults age 16 and up are eligible to participate. You'll be seeing we are working with participants aged 18 to 64, and the reason for this is that beginning in 2001, the state of Massachusetts added a question to the BRFSS on sexual orientation identity. Do you consider yourself to be heterosexual or straight, homosexual or gay, if male, lesbian or female, bisexual or other? And I don't know why it's limited to people under 65. I guess asking people 65 and over their sexual orientation is just too crazy. why would people over 65 have a sexual identity? Don't know responses and refusals are also recorded by the phone interviewer, and we presented some thorough data, Carrie and I, at the LGBTI Health Summit in Philadelphia this past spring, on sort of the categorizations of responses and really looking at some of the criteria for where people fell into some of the other categories and who they were. Overall sample is large. From the 5 years collectively from 2001 to 2005, we have 32,237 individuals. And in combining those years of data, the estimates of sexual orientation identity in Massachusetts are that LGBs combined comprise 2.5% to 3% of our adult 18 to 64 population. When we're working primarily off of the single variable of sexual orientation identity, the question I just showed, although there is questions asked about behavior on the BRFSS, the way the questions are asked, they're asked through a series of splits, so only a portion of the entire sample are asked questions about sexual behavior, so you have that information on a much smaller grouping. Susan Keyes, a colleague at the Mass Department of Public Health, has had a paper accepted that looks at the correlations between the identity and the behavior questions. It's found relatively high correlations, around 90%. But we decided to go with the univariable measure at this point rather than some combined variable. I'll also just mention on that last slide that those numbers were very similar across race and ethnicity. I won't give all the numbers, but they were surprisingly consistent, with slightly higher rates of other for African American and Latino, which might be expected because of the notion that they're less likely to choose the kind of more mainstream gay or lesbian identity, or perceived as a white concept. So marriage by sexual orientation status by year. You can see the percentage of heterosexual identified individuals that are married hovers fairly consistently, around 57-58%. For LGBs, we have a pattern where in 2001 it's about 12%, 2002 and 2003 it's about 4%, and then in 2004 and 2005, after the legalization of gay marriage in Massachusetts, those numbers jumped to 18% and 23%. So we think there may have been some data issues in the first year the question was asked, even related potentially to interviewer bias about asking the question or the fact that it was the first time asked. That may make that number a little less stable. The outcome variables we worked with were for access to care, health insurance, yes, no, do you have any kind of health care coverage, including health insurance, prepaid plans such as HMOs, or government plans such as Medicare. For cigarette use, we looked at both lifetime and current, but we'll be presenting here on current, based on the question, do you now smoke cigarettes every day, some days, or not at all? And we dichotomized that into either not at all or a smoker. And then for a drug user, we characterized current drug users as people who indicated use of the following drugs in the past 30 days. You can read the list. Okay, so did some bivariate and then multivariable analysis, and I'm presenting some of the multivariable results. So are lesbians and bisexual women more likely to be uninsured than their heterosexual counterparts? You see a statistical relationship of greater likelihood, of odds ratio of 1.62, confidence interval outside of the 1. And these are adjusted for age, race, ethnicity, and education. Then we ask, does marriage matter? So we add marriage to the regression analysis, and lo and behold, when you compensate for marriage, it no longer is a statistical difference. We also adjusted this independently for employment alone, and employment alone does mitigate this relationship somewhat, but not as much as marriage, and in fact, there's still a statistically significant difference when employment is included. That, as you see, is mitigated by marriage. So similarly, for gay men and gay and bisexual men, are they more likely to be uninsured? Again, similar patterns. You see that. For men, there's also a greater likelihood of lack of insurance. And again, interestingly, similar, that relationship is mitigated when people are married. And again, the same pattern holds, that unemployment itself does not does some mitigation, but does not move it out of the area of statistical significance. For current smoking, are lesbian and bisexual women more likely to be smokers? So as the first presentation on tobacco summarized, and we know we see higher rates of smoking among lesbian and bisexual women, just statistically significant beyond the range, outside of 1. And again, adjusting for marriage pulls it into the range. So there you go. For men, you, again, similar patterns, slightly higher odds ratios for gay and bisexual men. But again, drops out slightly below the range of significance when marriage is added. Current drug use, are lesbians and bisexual women more likely to be recent drug users? Again, very high odds ratios from this data. And when you add marriage to the demographic, you still have a significant relationship. You do see some mitigating effects, but it is still a significant difference. So one area where marriage isn't quite pulling people out of some of their risk behaviors. Or people are using while they're married to tolerate marriage. gay and bisexual men, one thing that you again see the high odds ratio in terms of the overall use of recent drugs, not as high as the differential you saw with women, which was interesting. This was the only variable of the ones we're considering today where the women actually, we didn't test the significance of that difference, but just there was a joint interaction effect of gender and sexual orientation on the drug use variable that was significant. So there were significant differences in the substance abuse rates for lesbians and bisexual women compared to gay and bisexual men. And when we added marriage to this, we almost removed the elevated risk of drug use for gay and bisexual men compared to their straight pairs, but not quite. But still says something about the, well, it says something about a correlation. I'm not sure what it says exactly. So, in summary, lesbians and bisexual women are more likely to lack health insurance, to smoke, and to report recent drug use than their heterosexual counterparts. Gay and bisexual men are likewise more likely to lack health insurance, to smoke, and to report recent drug use than their heterosexual counterparts. Marriage tends to attenuate the differences, especially for health insurance and smoking. Sexual orientation-related disparities are similar for men and women in the areas of health insurance and smoking. However, sexual orientation-related disparities in the area of current drug use appear to be greater for lesbians and bisexual women than gay and bisexual men. The strengths of this were that this was a large household probability sample, and that the measure of sexual orientation identity has some strengths to it compared to some of measures used in other population or representative samples. So, for example, compared to behavior questions, it will include people who may be sexually inactive but who still define themselves as lesbian, gay, or bisexual. And it also includes non-cohabitors. So for the census data that's often being used these days, if people are non-cohabitors, you may not pick it up through the census data that they're in a same-sex partnership. Some of the limitations was that this is cross-sectional observational data, so you can't make really causal claims from this data. And in many ways, this is still a preliminary analysis. We are planning to, in terms of future research, use the natural experiment in Massachusetts and examine changes in the point prevalence of outcomes between sexual orientation groups to see if the change in prevalence coincides with legalization of same-sex marriage. I'd like to again thank Kevin Cranston at Mass Department of Public Health for facilitating access to the Mass BRFSS data. The SMART team, Sexual Minority Assessment and Research Team, is part of the group funded through the Ford Foundation. Some of the members are in the audience, and I really appreciate everyone. They've looked at some of this data and gave us some useful feedback on strategies. Thanks.